You are listening to the Wells Tech Podcast, where we talk about technology that can serve the church and its work of spreading the gospel. Wells Tech is a part of the Podcast Network on Streams, the internet media site sponsored by the Wisconsin Evangelical Lutheran Synod. Join the conversation by visiting our podcast website at wellstech.wells.net. You're listening to the Wells Tech Podcast for Wednesday, April 28th, 2010. This is episode 129, Road Trips, Dippity, and Flip-Flops. It's time again for the Wells Tech Podcast. It is Wednesday, April 28th, and we're up to episode 129. My name is Martin Spriggs, and I'm joined by two lovely ladies, as is our custom once a month. Sally Draper, my usual podcasting buddy in Sleepy Eye, Minnesota. Good morning.
Good morning, Martin. Happy to join you this morning.
Good to have you as well. And joining us from up north, as they say down here in southern Wisconsin, from New London, Gail Potratz. Good morning, Gail.
Good morning. Do you feel I should talk like a youper now.
do you feel up north?
Yeah, up north.
And yeah, the Milwaukeeans consider, I live in Slinger, which is north of Milwaukee. They figure that's up north. So. And for those in Illinois, all of Wisconsin is up north. So, how is everybody today?
We're doing very great here in Sleepy Eye, enjoying a bit of springtime, and it's been
isn't that
wonderful.
Nice? Yeah, it is. Awesome. Here we've got sunshine and about 60 degrees, and just I can't wait. I'm not a winter person. I'm not really even a spring person. I like the heat. So I'm hoping that we have a hot summer. We've had a couple summers of temperate temperatures. So hoping for something a little more robust.
With this having an education flair, I can safely say that everyone in Sleepy Eye has spring fever, especially the kids that are stuck in school for one more month, mm-hmm. and probably the teachers that are stuck there with them. So a good opportunity for us to look ahead to summer on this podcast and talk about different opportunities that are out there for personal development. The summer.
Yes, summer means time for many of our teachers to bone up on different things, and that's really the topic of the show. And we've asked Gail, our semi-regular classroom technology correspondent, to kind of give us an update on a program that she runs. And I know, Sally, you've got some potential resources you want to share as well. So maybe let's start, Gail, with your digital media conference, something you do... have done for a number of years now, right?
Right. I first started to be involved with the Stevens Group out of Milwaukee by participating in their conferences, and then eventually I became an instructor with them. And I very much enjoy this and am encouraging people, our teachers, to think about attending. This year we are meeting for 4 days in July, July 27th to the 30th, at the Art Center in Milwaukee. And what this conference is a hands-on development conference where we look at a lot of digital pieces and put them together. Everybody that participates puts together a project. It's a collaborative effort. You work in a group, and you come away with a project. And this year, the project that we're designing is actually going to be a project that's used by the docent project at the museum. Mm. So I'm not exactly sure how they're going to be putting them into place. When we worked with the museum in Milwaukee, they used our podcast projects for people to walk around and listen to as they looked at the displays. So I don't know exactly how the art museum is going to use them, but they have a specific purpose in mind for what we're creating. And that's always fun. We're featuring Dippity, Digo, VoiceThread, and iMovie or Movie Maker, whatever we, you know, if you're
whichever
a Mac or PC
right.
person.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we usually have some video involved. And we put it all together, and we have a low student-instructor ratio, so you get a lot of help. you can take this for credit or non-credit. And this year we switched colleges with that we are aligning with. We're going with Viterbo College, and we are getting these credits for, you only have to pay $160 per credit. You can get up to 3 credits for taking this 4-day workshop. Mm-hmm. The third credit, you have to do one extended thing later on, but that's a pretty good price for credits.
Yeah, for
sure. If you're looking for that.
How many people normally attend these things?
Between 1 and 200. Mm-hmm, this okay. year we're looking for, hopefully, we put out a lot of, if you're familiar with the Ideas group, down in the Milwaukee area, mm-hmm. and a couple other public school organizations have provided scholarships. So we expect higher numbers. We're prepared for like 265 people. Mm-hmm. So very excited about that.
So you're one of many instructors then?
Yes, okay. Yes.
And will every instructor be teaching the same thing, the same project?
Yes.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. You usually have several, like last year I had 2 groups of people to work with. Last year we didn't have as many people as we typically had. It was our second year at the same site. We were at the zoo, in fact. And mm-hmm. I don't know if that, you know, some people shied away from a second time at the same place, even uh-huh. though it was a different project.
Right.
But
So I'm familiar with VoiceThread and DIGO, of course, and iMovie and Movie Maker. What is Dipity?
Well, you know, Dipity was a pick of mine just a couple weeks ago.
You got to refresh my memory then.
Well, that's the reason I picked it, is because we're working with it here this uh-huh. summer, and it's a timeline. It's a digital timeline.
That's right.
So
that's right.
It's a very interesting piece, and to tell you the truth, I'm not exactly sure how we're going to put this together with Dipity. The project that we're making will be held together. Dipity will be the container for the pieces, so mm-hmm. to speak. Mm-hmm. So it's going to play a pretty big part in what we do here.
Okay. Yeah, now I remember when you brought that up, I went to the site, and it's kind of a virtual timeline where you identify through either web searches or content links different pieces of history in time, mm-hmm. and then it kind of crafts them together into a, you know, panorama of a certain event.
Right.
In a visual way. That's cool. So it sounds like you're going to kind of, you almost have to base your project on some event that has a continuum of some sort.
Right. It's a continuum of what you're doing to produce the project.
Ah, I see. Got it.
Yeah.
Okay. Got it. And what do teachers, can teachers do, I'm sorry, Sally, can teachers do something with the project? Is this something that can be replicated in the classroom? Is that the idea? Or is this just to introduce
right.
them to new technology?
Well, twofold. It introduces them to new technology, but it's not that they would produce this same exact project, mm-hmm. but using these tools, you just get all kinds of ideas
would
of
inspire
how you
can right.
modify things and use yeah, them okay. in the classroom for various
gotcha.
You know, different subjects.
Makes sense.
So.
And I was just going to comment, that's a great learning model. I think, you know, putting those teachers in the student's seat is a mm-hmm. good experience for them to,
right.
you know, kind of live with what it feels like to not quite know everything and have the big picture yet, but mm-hmm. explore and, you know, learn as they go and stuff. And
right.
I was just reading your Twitter feed this morning, Gail, and you had a great quote in your feed that said the greatest impact that teachers can have in their classroom is to become effective learners themselves. And
right.
I think this is a great conference, and conferences that are structured like this, more of the hands-on model and actually developing something. I know some of our teachers have participated in NLC's Smart Board training. And as part of the Smart Board training, they actually have a class project, and they have to stand up in front of their peers and present at the end of the week something they've developed in the Smart Note software. And that can be a little bit intimidating, but to actually force your hand and have to do it rather than just sit back and watch someone else
right.
really helps you to learn.
That's what impressed me about this conference in the first place. It's, you go to a lot of things and you take things back, but when you actually sit there for 4 days and go through the whole production step by step, it's a pretty great way to learn. It's fantastic. I really encourage people to take advantage. We have some of the people, too. It's always fun. The creator of Dipity, the Creative Deagle. We are going to be Skyping with them, and they're going to be talking to us about different trends in 21st century learning and how their tools were built to fit into those trends. So it's got, it isn't all practical to either. It's, there's a lot of behind the scenes, how does the culture of
theory
the day
and philosophy,
and the tool,
right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, how are they built in there? So that's always kind of interesting, interesting piece to the conference as well. Sure. It's a mix of stuff throughout the day. It's right. It's pretty tiring, I'll tell you, when you're finished with the day, boy. You know you've learned a lot.
Yeah, no kidding. Cool.
You can feel your head exploding.
Yeah, that sounds great. Well, I would assume that this would primarily be of interest to people that are local, but I'm sure some travel in as well. But we want to.
Oh, we have people from all over, yes.
Right? Mm-hmm. Great. Mm-hmm. What other resources you know, in this kind of area of professional or personal development did we come across in our research for the show?
You know, Martin, I'm just thinking as Gail's describing that hands-on model that it pretty much describes our final web training as well.
Right.
And during this show, we did want to make an announcement about summer final web training opportunities that we're opening up as of today.
Mm-hmm.
And we've expanded our training opportunities in a way in that we're going to repeat our final Web for Dummies class, which is a three-day all-encompassing kind of webmaster view of everything that you can do with your final website. And then we're going to add a single day, standalone day, called Final Web for Teachers. And that day is geared toward kind of a fast track for teachers who are just having to administer their corner of the web, their web.
Usually a classroom page, something
site.
Like that. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Mm-hmm. And we use that same model, Gail, as we do our final web development. We try to have hands-on exercises that the students can actually engage with the system and experience it and ask their questions and everything as they go.
Right. And I can vouch for that because I attended day three of Martin's final web down in Milwaukee.
Right.
And it was very good. I took a lot of good-natured ribbing for just coming to day three.
That's right. Yeah, she's a smart kid, yes.
But I learned some things. I'm working on the Riddler, trying to get the... because we do get an awful lot of junk mail, and I'm thinking that maybe that is the source of some of those. I picked up a lot of good tips on that day three, and Sally, thank you so much for putting all those things together in such a nice format. I went back this week to look into the forms and questionnaires after your tutorial, after seeing that come out
good
in
stuff.
Such a nice fashion. So
yep.
That was excellent, and yeah, I would encourage teachers, anybody, but that's a really neat feature that you added, the one day for teachers. I am going to be sure to let my teachers know that. They're doing a pretty good job. Last year was the first year they were all responsible for their own classroom part of the web, and this would be great for them to go and refresh.
Yep. Did you mention the date, Sally? I think you maybe did. July 19th is the day for teachers, and it's $49, and with that you get a nice book that Gail was just talking about of hands-on lessons. You get breakfast, you get lunch, you get snacks. I mean, you're well fed, and both with sustenance and also with good content and your ability to ask questions. So July 19th that's a Monday, I think, and that's both in Milwaukee here at the Senate Administration Building and in New Ulm, where Sally will be leading that one. I'll lead the one here in Milwaukee. And then our regular Final Web for Dummies class would be July 20th to 22nd, so immediately following that. That's $49 a day or $129 for all three. And if you go to bit.ly/FW4Dummies, you can get all the information on the Final Web for Dummies. And if you're interested in the teacher side, that would be, interestingly enough, bit.ly/FW4Teachers. So take
we're
a look.
We're real
at
clever,
that.
Aren't we, Mark?
We are, yes. We
like this.
We're nothing
bit.ly
if not.
URL.
We're nothing if not uninvented. Inventive. Easy for
something
me to
like
say.
That.
So now that we've plugged Gail's stuff, we've plugged our stuff, we should probably share some other resources that other people might be interested in and give props to our higher ed institutions who also have a growing course offering this summer for professional development, right?
That is absolutely right, Martin. We have links to include in the show notes to Martin Luther College, Wisconsin Lutheran Seminary, and Wisconsin Lutheran College, all having summer offerings. Mm-hmm. Many of them on-site classes. However, MLC is offering 25 online classes.
Right.
I was really excited to see the large selection.
So you can take those in your shorts and flip-flops this summer.
That's right. Mm-hmm. And the seminary, for the first time this summer, has one online class that they're opening up to those outside the seminary. They've been doing some online resources on their Moodle site for their regular seminary students, but this summer, with their summer quarter, they introduced the first ever online class to the world, mm-hmm. and it will be the Apostle Paul and Leadership taught by Professor Alan Sorum.
Cool.
And so check out those online offerings, even if you can't make it to MLC or the seminary or Wisconsin Lutheran College. They all have great summer sessions planned.
Now, Sally, are you doing a class this summer at MLC, or is that later?
Actually, it's going to be later. I'm actually taking two online classes this summer from Professor Grunwald about teaching online. So I always learn some more about how best to present content for online learning.
Very good. And I am teaching a class this summer at the seminary. My first time teaching at summer quarter. I've taught Winterim and a few other things up at the Sem, but this is my first summer quarter class. I'm teaching a class on productivity for pastors. Call it Mind Like Water, the Art of Productivity. So I'm looking forward to that. So we'll get all that stuff in the show notes. We have a couple other resources we want to reference before we jump off this topic.
Well, I think Gail and I both, as we put our heads together, thought, you know, you can learn so much just from the professional development resources that are on the web. Gail wanted to mention a couple of different books and blogs. I had a link I want to include in the show notes for the ITSE conference. That's the International Society of Tech and Education. And they're having a summer conference in Denver this summer. And even if you can't attend, follow these folks on Twitter and you will glean the best of that conference just from their massive comments that they'll be posting during that week. So if you aren't on Twitter yet, maybe now's the time to join, and that would be a great professional development kind of step to take as well, and start following some of the education technology leaders that are out there sharing their thoughts on a regular basis.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's the greatest thing about summer is you finally get a chance to read some of the blogs I've been sticking away all year and haven't had a chance to give my undivided attention to. I just encourage people to expand their personal learning networks. Maybe hook up with a couple of good blogs and read them faithfully throughout the summer. Sometimes you find that educators that do some of these resources do kind of sort of take the summer off. It isn't as intense during the summer. They don't write as much, which is, I always think, kind of too bad because that's the time I have more time to read them. But I always have enough
stored up. The power of the web, you can always go back. Exactly.
That's right. And I always have those stored up. My DGO list can finally get to be not marked unread on all of my things I save.
That's right.
So go ahead and expand your knowledge that way. There's just no shortage. It doesn't have to be in a formal way. Just catch up on your reading. That's what I hope to be able to do.
And just one final mention, kind of the flip side of it is our congregation in particular has looked at using technology as an outreach tool. So not just being a consumer of learning about technology, but actually sharing our knowledge about technology and inviting people into the congregation setting, into the church basement or whatever, for these presentations on technology. We did this last summer and have some resources posted from last summer, and we're going to be updating it, offering both adult community ed classes as well as a summer kids camp. That may be something you want to look into as well. You're certainly welcome to look over my shoulder at the resources that I've produced so far, and I'll be keeping you up to date as we progress on our development for this summer.
Great. Thank you, ladies. Good stuff. No excuses now for not kind of getting. And now is probably the time to plan, because once you get into summer, you know, things just kind of take over. And if you don't have a structured approach to your summer learning schedule, you're going to miss out. So take advantage of all those resources that we just mentioned. News and tech. Some sad news from the tech industry regarding one of our oft recommended create your own social networks called Ning. Ning used to be free, but no longer. If you want to really do anything with Ning, you've got to pay the piper. And that's too bad, because I thought Ning was a great concept, and apparently they couldn't make the free model work with advertising or whatever. So that's kind of a bummer. There has been some discussion about Ning alternatives. I know, Gail, you were interested in that. Did we come up with any?
Oh, yeah, there's a lot of them. I think I Twittered them to the Wells Tech, so I don't know if you picked up on them that way. Was talk about BuddyPress for one. BuddyPress is one you can look at, and Tapped In. I sent a list of them through the Twitter feed, I believe. And I myself have not pursued any of those to this point. I'm still hoping that Ning did come out with some things about educational pricing. There are some pretty big customers of theirs, like Classroom 2.0 and those types of folks, that I'm sure they're going to have to come up with some decent model for that market, because there's a lot of education involved in those things. So I'm kind of waiting to see what they're going to really do.
Okay. Well, we will keep our eye on that. But in the meantime, there are other resources. And I can even think of other technologies that might fit the bill there, too. There's wikis that might cover some of those needs. And obviously, you've got the whole Google suite and so on and so forth. So,
I think the bigger question around the whole shutting down of Ning is, what kind of power do these sites have over us? How much are we investing in these free tools?
Go ahead.
We need to consider our investment before we go down that pathway, because just like that, we don't have any control. They can pull the rug out from under us.
Yep. I can think of a couple tools, Web 2.0 tools, that I would be in serious trouble if they went away. One would be Gmail, which I use for all my personal email. And there are tools that are out there, one called Backupify, that allows you to take snapshots of some of these resources, although I've never got it to work, or maybe it doesn't work yet with Gmail. It's supposed to, but I know with my Picasa stuff and some other, my Twitter stuff, it backs up all that stuff. So that's something you really want to keep in mind if you're going whole hog on some of these Web 2.0 cloud-based solutions, that you've got a way to get your stuff if they go away.
The comment I read on the EdTech podcast site said that the argument could be made that it would be better, perhaps even more reliable, to self-host sites like you might develop on Ning. So actually go to through the process of getting your own domain hosting service and installing your own software, some of the open source software that you can control on your own domain. Got to take it to another level with your techiness to do that.
Oh, for sure. Yeah.
It's a lot easier to sit down and create an account on Ning than it is to do that.
I mean, that's the appeal, I think, of Web 2.0 is you just need to create a username and password and do a 5 minutes worth of setup, and they've done all the rest for you, as opposed to all the maintenance and all the upgrades you have to do yourself.
Absolutely, that's the appeal until it's big and they pull the rug out from under you.
Yeah.
And then you think, boy, maybe that wasn't the wisest thing. It's a hard thing.
It is. I think it's gonna be a nagging question every time you want to use some of these cloud-based tools. And churches and schools are gonna have to deal with that too, because they like the appeal of cloud-based solutions, because many of them are free.
So schools and
churches are obviously looking for cheaper solutions, but it comes with some risk. Yeah. Shall we move on to picks of the week?
I can hardly wait.
I bet you can. Gail, would you like to lead off today?
Sure. I found this pick of the week, Doodle, it's called, which sounds like it would have something to do with art and drawing, but it does not. Which is good for me.
In true Web 2.0 fashion,
the old
yes.
Bait and switch there.
Right. But Doodle, which is just doodle.com, is a very handy tool for scheduling collaborative meetings. when you have, you know, 9 people and you need to get together for a meeting, and instead of emails flying back and forth of who's available when, you can just use Doodle. Somebody signs up for an account. I didn't even have to sign up. I actually saw this because I'm involved in, I'm a participant in a meeting, and I was sent this link to go to so we could coordinate our meeting time. And I just added my name to the, it looks like a little calendar with the first person who had sent this, marked all his available times, and then we all have, it looks like a spreadsheet, we all have our row, and then we mark okay, 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 or leave it blank with a check mark. And so I can look at that and I can see when all the people are available to meet, and then that's how the sender comes back to everybody and says, okay, let's go with this one because this is the date and time that most people have checked that they can make it. So I haven't seen it used before. I had not seen it anywhere before. When I logged into it, I was sent the invitation to go here to sign up for, you know, getting the meeting. I did not have to even sign in or do anything. It was just there. So just the creator of the Doodle is the one that has the account, and the participants really don't even have to have an account. They just sign up, and if you're not the creator, you don't need to have your own account even to participate. So
what's,
very handy.
What's with the name then? I don't get it.
Doodle. Yeah, I guess I really
do. Do they have other products perhaps that that they use, or this is it?
That could be. They're working on, they have a pay, this is free, but they have a, you can get this in a branded form too for your company, without ads. There are ads on this. I didn't even notice them, to tell you the truth, till I read that the branded one was ad free. Yeah, they do have that kind of a model, and they also have, a mobile Doodle for the iPhone and an iGoogle widget.
Oh, of course.
And there's a Facebook Doodle, so you can get these widgets to do this scheduling and all of these types of things. I really don't see that they have any other,
other products. Okay. Well, I see
think
in
it's
there.
Because
go ahead, Sal.
Most people doodle in your meetings, Martin. That maybe you didn't realize.
Hey, nobody doodles in my meetings.
There we go.
Yeah. I can't see what I'm doing in your meetings.
Oh, I know. Don't tempt me, or we'll go video on you. So.
No.
I see on the premium version, it also allows syncing with calendars.
Right.
Which I think makes it even more useful, as opposed to having to, you know, regurgitate your calendar up on Doodle, have it just, you know, look into your Outlook or your G calendar or whatever, and figure it out for itself.
True.
All right, very good. Doodle.com. Sally?
All right, I have been saving up this pick for a few weeks for our educational focus show. It was actually something that Jason Schmidt tweeted about, and it is Lit2Go. And if you just Google LIT, the number 2, and GO, you'll land on their website. It's done by the Florida Educational Technology Clearinghouse, and spearheaded by the University of South Florida. And what they've done is they've put together a free collection of online stories and poems in MP3 format, and they're geared toward K-12. And it's a lot of the classics, things like 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea and all of Shakespeare's works, and Huckleberry Finn and Sherlock Holmes and things like that. Lots of short stories as well. Very high quality recordings, very well done. You can actually view the text on a web page or even on your iPhone or iPod Touch if you're listening to it and you're in MP3 format. They're out on iTunes, so you can get it through iTunes University and easily sync it with your iPod if you happen to have one of those. And we've listened to several already in my family, and are very excited about the offerings. We're always looking for things to listen to with our kids, and just some really great content here and very high quality. So if you are interested in audiobooks or short stories, check out Lit2Go.
That is really cool. I wish I had, I should check this out, because I recently downloaded a couple classics from George Orwell, and I should have checked out I should have checked this out in iTunes University because I know there's a ton of stuff there. I just read Animal Farm, and I'm right now reading 1984, and I bet those are in there since those are classics. And I paid the Audible fee to download those. So yeah, I think iTunes University is really an untapped resource, especially for educators and things like this. There's all kinds of stuff like that. So.
And it's really growing now. Yeah. It's really taken off. At first it was kind of slow, but the content is just vast now if you start searching.
Cool. And you download it just like a podcast, right?
Yep, you sure do. But it has this feature of having the words on the screen.
Mm-hmm.
And, my kids are watching it, you know, as they're listening. They're reading along with it and
sure.
stuff. So
yeah,
that's
helps.
A nice feature as
yeah,
well.
Yeah, absolutely. Very cool. Lit to go. My pick of the week is a product from Adobe, been around for quite some time. For anybody who works with images, we've talked about some online image editors. Picnic is one, Aviary is another. I was working on some images for a congregation and was not real satisfied with how text was rendered. It anti-aliased it so much that it was a little fuzzy. And I tried Aviary, or I tried Picnic, and neither one of them handled it real, real well, or as well as I wanted to have it done. So I went in search of other products, and I downloaded GIMP, and I tried that, and that wasn't real. That was a little better, but not quite the fidelity I was looking for either. So I finally settled on Photoshop, which I use in from day to day on different projects, but that's kind of spending. So when you when a congregation or a school is looking at an image editing package, that may be out of their reach. Photoshop runs, even for educational pricing, it's going to be over $200-$300. But what I did find, and I recommended to the congregation I was working with, is Photoshop Elements, which is kind of a trimmed down version of Photoshop, but it works with exactly the same file format. And that's under $100 with educational pricing. I think it's well under $100. And it's very graphical in its interface. It's very easy to use. You have layers. You have good topography and good kerning and all the things that you would really want to create some nice imagery, especially for web graphics. And there weren't any features that I wanted to use for this project that weren't available to me in Photoshop Elements that were in Photoshop. So I think this would be a great alternative if somebody's looking for a little bit more industrial strength image editing, and they're not real satisfied kind of with the online tools because they are immature yet, and I think they're still working out some of the kinks for all kinds of applications. Photoshop Elements is definitely something to take a look at. Plus, you can read other Photoshop files. If you get Photoshop files sent to you, let's say you're working with a designer on your website and some imagery, they can send you that Photoshop layered file, and you can open it up in Elements and edit it just as if you had Photoshop. So check that out from Adobe.
I just found a link for that.
Go ahead.
And I was just going to say that they have a $30 rebate going on right now. So you can get
cool.
it for $70. Brings the price down from 100 to 70. I'm not seeing right off the bat nonprofit pricing, but
right.
that's very affordable.
Yeah, it is. Gail, you were going to say something?
I was just going to say I can vouch for that one, too. I was never satisfied. I could never find a good way to do layers with any of the other free tools or anything. So I actually several years ago already, I guess I got Photoshop Elements just for that reason alone. I wanted
right.
to be able to do a good job in the layers, and it is well worth its money.
Yep. It's a good tool. So, all right. We have a promo item this week, Sally.
That's right. We want our WellsTech listeners to sit up and pay attention now because we need your help. Martin and I are taking a road trip this summer, or at least a virtual road trip,
yes.
We've decided to take a tour of the country and check out some of the best things going on across our synod and churches and schools. And what we'd like to do is solicit volunteers to share with us on our summer series a specific function that you're doing in your church or school that other people could learn from. Perhaps you're using Skype to do Bible classes, or maybe you're have made great strides with smart boards in the classroom, or are live streaming your services over the web. We'd like to visit you. We'd like to perhaps get pictures and video from you, interview you for our summer series road trip as we travel around and kind of just come up with case studies of all these different functions that could be a part of congregational and school ministry using technology. So we're inviting you to submit your ideas. Just email us or type them out on the comment form that's part of the Wells Tech website, and let us know what you're doing so that we can include you as we travel across the country and check out all the good things that are going on out there.
I'm excited about this. I think there are lots of great ideas out there, and we'd love for others to share with the class. And so nominate, and it doesn't even have to be your own. If you're new, you're aware of some other tool, technology, idea that's going on out there that might be innovative, that might be worth sharing, that others could benefit with, let us know. Now, we haven't talked about kind of a contest around this, but maybe we will put something together, Sally, that would kind of nominate the best of breed here. And at the end of the summer, maybe give them a little Wells Tech tchotchke.
Oh, that sounds like a great incentive, Martin.
That's right.
You know, the sky's the limit. So if you're doing closed captioning or email newsletters, you know, all those little pieces fit together for congregations, and there's plenty out there that aren't doing it yet that would love to learn about the steps you took to put it in place.
Yep. So get on our radar, our summer road trip. And we're going to start this in mid-June, I'm thinking, right?
That's what we're anticipating, yes.
All right. Community feedback.
Well, I had some interesting feedback following up on last week's show. You know, Rob made the statement when we were talking about backups with Rob Benson from our tech office that your hard drive will fail. They're designed to fail. They even put a date on there or something about that. And it kind of, you know, shakes you when you hear that kind of statement. And tweeting about it and putting that on my Facebook page generated a little conversation with some of my buddies from high school, believe it or not. And I just had to share what they said in regard to hard disk failure. One of my friends wrote, "When it does fail, and it will, wrap it in cellophane to keep moisture out and pop it in the freezer overnight. A frozen drive may run long enough to get the data transferred. I've had about 90% success rates with that little trick. Not so lucky with laptop drives, as they are smaller and warm up more quickly. But I've frozen seemingly dead and a dead drive and ghosted it to a new drive and been able to be back in business in a day." And I don't know about you, Martin or Gail, but I had never heard about putting your hard drive in the freezer.
I actually have heard that. Yes, never tried it.
This falls into that technology. Technology through appliances category, because I've heard of throwing keyboards in dishwashers, and now we've got hard drives in freezers. So I have heard of this before too. So it sounds like it works, and I've heard that it does work. So just a little quiz for you, a follow-up quiz from last week's show. Anybody know what MTBF stands for?
I think I fail.
I just listened to it the other night, too.
I wasn't in the show. So, this is a little acronym you'll see sometimes on hard drives or in the specs. Mean time between failures. So that's the little item that'll tell you, you know, how many days or cycles, you know, will transpire before you can expect something to go wrong. So, and it will. But you've got some solutions here. But the best solution of all is to back up.
Right.
All right. Moving on.
Last week's show.
Yeah.
All right. Next, we wanted to share a few tweets from Jason Schmidt. We mentioned him earlier in the show. He is a teacher at Gethsemane in Omaha, Nebraska.
Sally, I noticed that because he's such a frequent contributor, we don't even put his last name in the show notes here anymore. Or not in the show notes, but on our script. It's just Jason, as if there is no other Jason.
Our good friend Jason. I have to meet him face to face someday.
I know, that'd be cool. We should have a Wells Tech reunion, although we've actually never all been together. So,
a tweet up, Martin.
That's not a bad idea. I like that. Not all of our listeners are tweeters, though, so we'll have to do a recruiting job.
Well, maybe
job
that will
there.
Inspire them.
That could. Or it'll be just us and Jason.
No, there's more. Ryan,
there is more, yes.
Yeah, Ryan Rosenthal would be there. Too.
That's right, okay.
Yep, he would be there. He's next up on our list. Okay. But back to what Jason had to share, he shared a link to Harmony. It's at harmony.mainsoft.com, and it is a solution for integrating your Google Docs with Outlook so that you can include links to documents as opposed to attaching documents.
Yeah, this is cool. I tried this. I downloaded this, and because we use Outlook here in the office. We also use, there's a plugin for SharePoint as well, which is our Synod's intranet. So I've got both of those installed, and it is really cool. I think this, anybody that's using Outlook would do well to install these, and it allows you not only just to drag a file into your email and then automatically create a link to it, but you can permission it there so you can make sure they can get in. You can also drag emails out into your Docs or your SharePoint drive, or just drag docs of any kind into the window from your desktop or file system, just as if you were logged into Google Docs, all from the comfort of your Outlook install. So great find, and it's free as well.
Yep, love that price tag. So check it out if you are an Outlook user. I think you'd be very happy with it.
Yeah, thanks, Jason, for bringing that to my attention. I think that might be something we'd consider using here in the Synod office as well.
Very good. And Jason also wanted to make sure we made mention of a wiki that he has been collaborating on. It's called the Curriculum Resources for Christian Teachers Wiki, and it's hosted on Wikispaces. We'll have a link in our show notes. I know Jason has put a lot of content out there in addition to other teachers from the Synod, and he's hoping that more people will use the resources there and join the wiki and update it as well. So check out this CRCT wiki, and I'm sure they'd be happy to hear your feedback.
Very good.
Next up is Ryan Rosenthal's tweet. He shared a link, I guess it wasn't a tweet, he sent us a comment about a VoiceThread project that he's been working on, and I was so excited to check this out, have a real example of some great VoiceThreads. Ryan says that he did the project with his seventh graders. They had to write a tall tale choosing one of the topics from a text list that he gave them, and then they had to make three pictures to go along with it in Microsoft Paint, and they put it all together in a VoiceThread. So what you see when you go to each of these projects is their pictures come up and their voice as they read their story, their tall tale that they wrote. And so it's a whole classroom of examples of using VoiceThread, and I think you'll enjoy them. You should check out the link that we have in our show notes. Interestingly enough, Ryan said the only problem they have technology-wise was the fact that they all went to upload their pictures at the same time, and they ran into some bandwidth issues. So you'll definitely need some bandwidth juice to have a whole classroom of kids working on the web at the same time. But if that's the biggest problem they had, that's pretty good, I think.
Yep.
They could work through that. And finally, the last bit of feedback was actually from you, Gail, because Martin had picked last week an air mouse, an example of a mouse that
right.
you could pick up off the table and use in the air as a presentation pointer kind of device. And Gail,
right.
you tweeted about the fact that there's an air mouse application.
Right. For the iPod, and I'm sure iPhone, but I use it on my touch, you can get, it's just an app called Air Mouse, and it turns your iPod into your presentation device, much like Martin talked about using the trackpad with his to do the same thing. So apparently it does the same thing, but you don't have to have another piece of equipment. If you already have your phone or you already have your iPod, you wouldn't need to even have a mouse. You could do the same thing with that piece of equipment.
And I did a little looking around. They have a free version as well as a pro version, which cost $1.99 in the App Store on iTunes. And they also have an iPad version out already, and it's $2.99. And they all three have some really good reviews, so I think people are pretty pleased with the product. Martin, I don't know if you've ever tried those.
I use it, yes. My son has recommended this too, being the good Apple employee that he is. But we have a Mac Mini at home that runs our TV at this point, and that's one of the ways that we can control it is through my iPhone and the this Air Mouse application. It works pretty well. I notice it dumps itself off the network because it works all over Wi-Fi. Dumps itself off the network once in a while. You got to reconnect it, but it's very accurate and. It works basically like a virtual trackpad, so it's nice.
Have you ever used it in a presentation setting?
I have not.
I have.
And you like it?
Yeah, up at we use them a lot. There's a lot of Mac people at the Stevens Group in the summer, and that was the big thing last summer. I'm noticing I do have the Pro. I don't have the free copy but it was like $4.99 and it was on sale last year. So it's come down in price quite a bit since last year. That was what we were all playing with last year at the conference.
Now you have to use it with a Mac, right? There's not a Windows version.
I don't know. I
would be suspicious if there was. So.
It just says wireless remote for your computer. I don't know. I didn't get that impression. I'll have to try it.
Okay. One other piece of feedback that we didn't get on the list here, Sally, was a wall post from our Wells Tech podcast site from my beloved daughter, Alicia Cameron. She says, with all the talk about Apple products, when is the first Wells app going to come out? Locator would be an awesome thing to have while traveling. There should also be a Wells Tech tagline at the end of each show, reminding everyone to back up their computers. Who knows, maybe it could become as famous as Bob Barker's sign-off line. Well, I don't know about that, but we should remind our folks about the backup as often as we can. So what about that Apple app?
Well, we did work on the iSites website and submitted it through them, but I think it's kind of stalled
in the process.
I think
it's dead in the water.
We need to look for some other alternative.
Apple announced, I think last week or 2 weeks ago, that they were going to prohibit all third-party iPhone app development tools, that you have to use their stuff. And I'm thinking it got caught up in that. So we're actually on the hunt for iPhone developers, and because I think this would be a great idea. Well, because the one that we created kind of for free was just kind of an RSS aggregator where we would pull down all of our content. And this does work on Android now. So if you use Android, you can actually get this app, or something similar. But I think a Wells Locator app would be awesome.
Yeah, that's a great idea. Mm-hmm.
So I don't know if anybody's out there with those skills, but if you are, let us know. We'd love to do that.
Now, if I understand correctly, app development has to be done on a Mac. Is that right, Martin?
Yes, that is also true.
Mm-hmm. That's a bummer.
Mm-hmm. That is a bummer.
I'd love to try my hand at it or put some work toward it. Yep. Here in Sleepy Eye, but we don't have a Mac in our possession. Maybe it's time we get one, huh?
Yeah, I don't know. Anyway, I know a relative of mine who would really support that purchase. All right, let's move on to what we're doing next week. We are going to return to the Shane Hipp's book, The Hidden Power of Electronic Culture. Sally has found a way to accelerate our progress through the book to the bitter end, and that the brainchild she had was, well, let's do two chapters at once. under the guise of, I don't know what under what guise
I
it
think
was.
we need to finish it up before our road trip
Oh, that's
series.
What it was.
Before
Yes,
summer,
I
since
remember now.
we want to get to the end of this book. I'm so excited to get that final chapter under
Yes.
my belt.
So we're going to be covering chapters 6 and 7, Community in Electronic Culture and Leadership in Electronic Culture. So those of you following along at home, make sure you get through those two chapters, and we'll hit the highlights for you as well. I think that's going to do it. Thank you, Gail. Thank you, Sally. Another well-done effort. And let's close the show with the music of In His Service, O Lord, Send Forth Your Spirit from their album In His Time. Thanks, everybody, for joining us. We'll talk to you next week.